There's the big board, the 20 electoral votes from the state of Pennsylvania. We just got new metrics in.
The inauguration of a president celebrates a peaceful transition of power engineered by the American voters.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome to the 45th podcast. This is Rabia here, and I'm here with my colleague Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan, how are you?
Hey, Rabia.
This week, I am very excited that we have a guest we have never had on before. Wajahat Ali is, first of all, a good friend, but he's also a journalist, a writer. He's a lawyer, award-winning playwright, has been a TV host, has worked across all kinds of different government agencies as a consultant, and he is a very well-known Twitter personality as well, and he's a very well-known American Muslim voice on lots of different issues, and I'm so excited to welcome Wajahat to the show today. Hey, Waj.
Thank you. Basically, I haven't figured out what I want to be when I grow up, but I'm honored to be here to talk about the orange menace with tiny hands. So thank you.
Thank you for joining us to talk about him. And I think you have chosen wisely by deciding to be everything when you grow up.
When you're everything, it means you're nothing. And basically, just to throw the scent off your South Asian relatives who are trying to figure out why you're not a doctor. And you just hope you can extend like the time.
That, and also, you know what's helpful also is when they try to get free legal work and you're like, oh, I'm not really a lawyer. I don't do that anymore.
I outsource that to you and Susan. Like, honestly, when I go to like South Asian Pakistani kebab joints, they always ask me for like free immigration advice. And I'm like, I have a friend, Rabia.
Oh, I haven't done that in six years. We'll talk about that later. But, you know, so how, for, let me ask you, this is the first time you're on our show. We've been running for almost a year now. Or has it been a year? No, it hasn't been. Has not been a year. But how has your Trump administration experience been so far, Waj?
I think we were just talking about it before. It's exhausting because you want to do work, and this son of a gun just distracts me from my work productivity. Because he tweets something outrageous every day. There is just some colossal misfire, a self-inflicted wound, more chaos, and then you're like, it's like Michael Corleone in the kitchen scene from Godfather 3. Every time I try to get out, he pulls me back in. And I feel as an American citizen concerned enough that I have to follow it. It's almost one of those situations where it's like a Pyrrhic victory, yeah. Where even if we, you know, basically you have to contain this damage that many of us took seriously and literally, because as you know, I was at the DNC, I covered the campaign, I was at a Trump rally in Maine. Before the election.
That was terrifying.
The only person of color, the only journalist, I talked to the Trump voters. And so, one positive is at the very least, it has inspired what I've seen, a multicultural coalition of the willing. And at least people are talking about ethics mm-hmm. and civics mm-hmm. and the law. Like that never used to happen back in the day.
I think that Trump distraction you mentioned is actually why we made the 45th podcast, because that way, when we're distracted by Trump stuff, we can at least pretend we're working on it. Like, we now have an excuse to waste time on Trump.
We have an excuse to waste time. It's research. Or my husband's like, "What are you? Why are you always on Twitter?" I was like, it's research, damn it. It's for my work. No, but I do want to say this. I think you're totally right on all counts. Yeah, definitely it has created a coalition, a really multicultural, diverse coalition of the resistance that didn't exist before. It's called to light issues that we don't pay attention to, including issues that a lot of people for many years, if not decades, have been saying, hey, this is an issue, like Islamophobia and other things that nobody has been paying attention to and now they're taking seriously. But the suck on our time and productivity, I will say Susan Simpson is one of the most productive people I've met in my life.
You say that, but like you don't see all the time I waste. Like, well, number one, I'm like cat photos.
And yet you still. So Susan and I have two podcasts. The other one, Undisclosed, takes a lot of time and research. And forget the cases we're currently working on. She's like, oh, I'm like researching five other cases right now. I don't know how she does it, but
Susan, anyway. you're making children of immigrants look bad. Just stop. go away for 2018. Just go away.
I know. If you make us look bad.
It's over.
Well, you know what? We have our kids to blame too. I totally blame my babies every chance I get. So, all right. So
shamelessly.
Yeah. Let's get into it. So this past week, we're going to talk about, and as you know, we have a weekly show. We just talk about happens week to week, although the dumpster fire is daily. And so we could do this daily. But the two big stories I think to cover from this past week were The State of the Union that happened, highly anticipated. And then the unleashing of that memo that's been hinted at for quite a while. Those are the two big ones.
When you said, Rabia, that you were going to cover the State of the Union, I was like, man, that was so long ago. Shouldn't we do something this week? I'm like, oh, wait, it was last week.
It was. Isn't that crazy? But it felt like just like a little blip on the radar because of everything that happened afterwards, like just the big shit show that's been happening since then. But let's start with it. And is there anything else I've missed? Any other smaller stories or interesting stories that you guys cross your radar that you want to mention before we get into these two things?
So there's one story that I noticed yesterday that apparently happened like sometime last week. And I was mostly just surprised that somehow when it's happening, I never saw it. I was too busy with God knows what. But apparently Trump has been bragging about the fact that he passed the dementia test. And not only that, he stated it was risky for him to take that. He's like, you understand that, right? It was a risk taking it because if it doesn't go so well, then they'll use that against you.
I cannot believe that that happened.
Here's to low-hanging bars everywhere. May the rest of us, people of color and women, slither under the bar that Trump has to slither under to be seen as successful.
Hey, he's so courageous. He is so courageous. He took the step to bravely take a dementia test, knowing the results might not be great for him politically.
I'm the least dementious person, the least president.
Was this part of his physical, or was this like a separate? I have a feeling it was like he did it in the middle of the night, like online something.
No, he did. He requested it. He had the doctor do it. He asked for him to do it to try and defeat the rumors that whatever. But
What? That settles it. That settles it. He's just basically a racist, evil asshole. Then we don't have to worry about his mental health anymore. Thank you for settling that, President Trump.
I never, you know, when people attack him for being insane, I think it's a mistake, number one, because I think it takes away from people who are actually suffering from mental illnesses. And number two, I think it ignores his actual history. He has a very consistent history of deliberately stoking a racial animosity, especially against Black people.
Definitely.
And he deliberately went on this white nationalist campaign that was both fed to him by Steve Bannon, and I think he took pride in himself, you know, Mexicans, Muslims, immigrants, Black people. Chicago is code word for Black people, Black violence.
Yep.
And so, you know, this is who Trump is, and this is who Trump is going to be. But there's really two quick stories I want to really mention, since you asked.
Mm-hmm.
A big story that got passed over because of all the chaos of the State of the Union that happened 1,000 years ago, but it was only last week, was that Russia overwhelmingly are dysfunctional Congress passed a bipartisan vote to increase and extend the Russia sanctions, and the White House refused to honor that. That's a huge story, number one. Mm-hmm. And number two, as of today, the Supreme Court is allowing Pennsylvania to proceed with the Supreme Court ruling that the state had that the Republicans gerrymandered Pennsylvania to like a disfigured, horrible extent that basically tarnished the voting rights and specifically the Democratic Party. So the fact that that map is going to be redrawn in Pennsylvania and that the Supreme Court is going to allow that to happen is a huge story and a big win. And I think bodes really well for Americans, forget Democrats, but just Americans, because we've seen problems in Florida, in Wisconsin, in North Carolina. And the fact that the Supreme Court said that today, despite Republican objections, I think is a big, big.
So how long before Trump tweets something angry at Gorsuch? I mean, that was his man, right? Isn't he supposed to be doing his bidding and making things happen? This is a big deal. This is going to have a real impact.
Yeah, I think right now he's really pissed off at little man Adam Schiff. So he can't, you know, even though he doesn't have dementia, I think he has a problem juggling coherent thoughts at the same time.
Yeah, well, his ass is directly on the line. So he's.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So right now, until the Democrats release the memo or are allowed to release the memo, I think that's going to dominate his mind for this week. That's my take.
And there's one other story that's still, I mean, I think probably one step in along the way to a much, much, much bigger story. But around the time of the State of the Union, it was announced that the man who was going to be nominated for our ambassador to South Korea was being withdrawn by the White House because, in part, or apparently because he was publicly making statements against the Bloody Nose strategy. The Bloody Nose strategy is this idea that world politics is a bar fight, and you can settle nuclear dispute by showing that you're the bigger, tougher guy in the bar. And we can somehow do a limited strike against North Korea that will cause them to agree to give up all the nuclear weapons. It's an insane idea, and this would-be ambassador, who was, you know, trusted by Americans, by South Koreans, would have been a great pick for the job, was not going along with this idea. And for that, they've said, nope, you're no longer going to be ambassador. We had none at all, none of the pipeline. And the noise and the talk about a preemptive strike against North Korea is growing louder by the day.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's one thing that Bannon was right about is China and North Korea. If you guys remember his comments, it's kind of unwinnable for us because North Korea will retaliate. And if it retaliates, which it will, is going to attack South Korea. And within like a period of a week, millions of people will die. And Trump did say something in his State of the Union address, which I don't think people picked up on, is that he says, I hope we can unite together. Usually it takes the big event for people to come together. I want to avoid that big event. And why is it outside the realm of imagination to think that they would do this to distract from the Russia investigation and try to rally America around a military war, which is not the first time that has happened in the past 20
years. I mean,
a
nuclear war.
We can't imagine it. It's too horrific.
This is not Iraq or Afghanistan. He's talking about a nuclear war. He's talking about a whole different level of, I mean, it's not a great way to distract people because it's not exactly something that would be supported. But also about that, the withdrawal of the nomination that you mentioned, Susan, I mean, there's the information coming from the nominee himself who withdrew is very different than, isn't the administration saying that he failed like some background check or something and it wasn't on this
issue? They don't
issue?
Have a solid answer. They've been like going back and forth.
Okay. I thought he withdrew his nomination.
No.
Okay.
And also the Trump, today I think they were saying the Trump nominee, the ambassador to Barbados, is also a man who fueled all the conspiracy theories during the campaign against Republicans. He's the guy who attacked Ted Cruz and his wife, and also I think Scott Walker of Wisconsin and Mitt Romney. And so this is the gem that the Trump administration has pinked.
You know what? I really feel like Stephen Miller sits in a corner somewhere and he just, these names have to come from him. I don't even think these kinds of people are on Trump's radar or anybody else's radar except for Miller's. And he's the cockroach who continues to hang in there in that administration too. I don't know about you, Susan, but as a woman in my life, it's not like I have had the same bra size my entire life. Your body changes, and you know what? Your bra has to change along with it.
I'll tend to like find a bra that I like, and I really like that one, and I'll like have to buy like three of the same kind, so I'm too afraid once it wears out, I won't find it again, and then I'm stuck forever.
Well, you don't have to be stuck forever, not with the same bra, and you also don't have to be stuck with different terrible kinds of bras, because Third Love is the bra company of my choice now. Because number one, as my body changes, and I'm saying this, you know, people know that I'm trying to train. I've lost some weight in the last few years and I gained some with my pregnancy. It happens. Well, I need a consistent, you know, I need a company that will consistently give me great bras, you know, and good support. And that's what Third Love does, because they use thousands of real women's measurements and super smooth memory foam to create bras that fit better and feel great.
Yeah. And I'll say, I mean, I have two of their bras. I love their standard bra, but their racerback bra has been a lifesaver with a lot of clothes that goes great with. So definitely check them out and find one that fits you.
Well, they carry, you know, most brands only carry 15 sizes, but Third Love has 60 sizes, including half cups. And honestly, until Third Love, I had never heard of a half cup, but ladies, you need the half cup, believe me. It's just going to give you a better fit.
I mean, shoe sizes have half sizes, so, I mean, it makes sense.
Right. Why not? That just makes sense. So do clothing sizes. Well, at least for men, clothing sizes do, but that's a whole other conversation. Well, right now, Third Love has a great offer for our listeners. That's 15% off your first order. And to find the bra that you have been waiting for, all you have to do is answer a few simple questions. And so there's no guessing game in it. You answer some questions on Third Love's Fit Finder quiz. It takes 60 seconds. You can do it from your home. And it'll tell you exactly what is the right bra for the fit, style, and they have lots of different styles that you need.
So this year, make the change to Third Love for all your bra needs. Go to thirdlove.com/45th to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first order. That's thirdlove.com/45th. thirdlove.com/45th.
All right, so any thoughts on the Russian sanctions, Susan, other than, no surprise?
You know, no surprise. He can't do anything against Russia. He's on, for whatever reason, he's unable to do so, either by, you know, character, intrinsic motivation, or, you know, external motivation. So it's not a surprise he did this. At the same time, there's little that can be done immediately to counteract it. He's going to claim that this was, you know, he has power to say, like, sanctions should be used to achieve a goal, and at this time, sanctions would not achieve a goal, so let's not do them. I mean, in reality, it's pretty clear what's going on, but there's not much going to happen in the short term.
Yeah, their response was that the threat of sanctions is a sufficient deterrent for now. Okay, a deterrent to what?
But doesn't it concern you? Look, at the end of the day, we're still waiting for the facts, but Donald Trump, who was voted in for being brash and politically incorrect, you know, he's mocked judges, press, FBI, DOJ, CIA, handicapped people, women. He has been utterly incapable of criticizing Vladimir Putin. Even when given a softball down the middle in an interview with Bill O'Reilly, if you guys remember that, he was incapable of criticizing Vladimir Putin, number one. Number two, they refused to extend these sanctions, which at this time would be a great, throwing off the scent, if you will. See, we're not beholden to Russia. Mm-hmm. And the overwhelming majority of Congress against, like, it was like 500-7 votes, one of the rare bipartisan moves, says, let's extend sanctions. And he said, nope. And then also, the day after he fired James Comey, people forget this, he hosted the ambassador to Russia, Kislyak, and also the Russian foreign minister, Lavrov, in the White House, where he basically admitted why he fired Comey, which was due to Russia, and also betrayed Israel when it came to national security intelligence, when it came to fighting ISIS. So for those of you who are objective listening to this, these are things that make you go, and are not the acts of a truly innocent person, even when you take into account their behavior when it comes to this Nunes memo and Adam Schiff today. It really should concern a lot of people.
That's actually a great point.
Apparently just now, like just as we're talking, Trump said that Democrats, for not appreciating his State of the Union, are un-American and treasonous.
What? Wait, did he tweet that?
At a speech, he just said that Democrats are un-American and treasonous.
Treasonous. I don't think he understands what treason means.
Or he's projecting. It's one of the
other. Or he's conflated himself with America.
He's confused. I will say, that's for sure. I mean, he thinks the DOJ are his men. I mean, like, he just thinks he's the emperor here. But I do think it's a great point you make, Wajahat, that at a point in time when this investigation is getting really heated, really intense, those sanctions were a move he could have easily made, right? Like, when you have an overwhelming majority of Congress representing the will of the people, making this move, nobody could have really poo-pooed him on it, right? His base wouldn't have, I don't think.
Putin could have poo-pooed Except him on for it, Putin. And that would have had bad consequences
Except
for him.
Except for Putin. So it makes you think, what does Putin... It's got to be something so bad. Whereas this guy could have kind of saved his hide just a little bit, covering himself if he had signed those sanctions. But anyway, let's move on to the actual State of the Union. Now, in general, what did you guys think? Did you find it presidential?
My answer would make me treasonous. So Susan, you go first.
The clapping was so boring because like it was like what like a word every like 5 seconds and then tons of clapping.
You know, a lot of them are like that. A lot of them are like that.
Not that much clapping. Not at that extent. It was insanely boring.
The GOP was like deliriously happy, but I thought it was funny. There were times when Trump himself, not only was he directly clapping into the mic the entire night, but then he actually, with using his hands, like gestured for people to stand up and clap. Like he was asking for people to give him a standing ovation. And a couple times, because, you know, on the Democratic side, on one side of the aisle, a lot of people just didn't get up. He would even signal to them, like, come on, get up, clap. But I will say.
Be wary of any man or woman who claps for himself or herself in a microphone.
Yes, especially in the microphone. Like, dear God.
I will say this. Melania didn't look too happy. She looked like, I don't want
good. That suit was pretty a bold choice, and I, you know, she denied it, but I cannot help but feel that was deliberate. She chose a white friggin' pantsuit. Come on.
That's a nod to Hillary, if I ever saw one.
And you know, there was another story that got hidden, is they were apparently they had their wedding anniversary in the past 2 weeks. You didn't hear any celebration about it. You didn't see any tweets.
She didn't go to Davos with them.
Yeah,
she
I don't think they were Davos together during their anniversary. I don't think.
Uh-oh, guys. Were. New breaking news alert.
What now?
The stock market's crashing.
Oh, God. Where are we?
About 20 minutes ago, it was down 500.
It's down like 1,100 now.
Ooh, wow, what do you think?
In the past 2 days, correct? In the past 2 days, right?
No, like the past 5 minutes.
Past five minutes, yeah.
Wow.
Damn, that's a hell of a drop. What do you think this is in response to? What's happening here?
The fact that reality catches up with you eventually, and having Trump is not actually good for the economy.
Yeah, I think it's the wave that he was hoping to ride has burst, and this is going to be the economy under Trump. What we experienced in the past year was the residuals, if you will, of the economy under Obama, including the strong economic power, the drop in unemployment, and the majority of Americans polled actually credited Obama, not Trump. Right. I think now what we're witnessing in 2018 going to 2019 is going to be the economy under Trump and the economy under the new Republican tax bill and this wave of isolationism.
I mean, I just read earlier this morning that business is, in fact, booming in the last year. Small businesses are increasing employment. Like you said, this could be residual impact. But, you know, look, Trump is good for business owners. Simple as that. There's no two ways around that. Anybody who, I mean, even for us, as you know, Susan and I, like, we
now when you break the economy,
right?
I'm
like,
no one.
Yeah, so it's, I'm not going to completely give him no credit for, like, you know, the bump that the market has seen.
There's no bump, though. There's no bump. It's just a steady rise from what happened before he got in here.
Yeah, it's all due to the Obama bump, honestly. And even though, you know, he touts the black unemployment was reduced under Obama. But ever since Trump has come, when you compare the 1 year of Trump versus what Obama's done, it's actually reduced.
Yeah.
So he's still riding this wave, number one. And number two, what we've seen in another stat that people kind of forget is in the 1 year that Trump has been in office, tourism to America has fallen, specifically the tourism economy.
Yeah.
It cost us billions of dollars, which affected thousands of jobs and businesses. And especially with, like, you know, him increasing the tariffs, well, there was a response to that,
mm-hmm.
which means now there's going to be an increase in goods and services, which, again, hurts our economy. And then the tax cut, that $1.50 that Paul Ryan tweeted about yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Can we talk about that for a second for folks who are not on Twitter?
Let them eat crumbs.
Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House, tweeted out a little anecdote about a school teacher who, I mean, this is, he was boasting that she said that she will see $1.50 extra in every paycheck, meaning it would cover her Costco membership for the year.
And
Not platinum.
Oh,
yeah. Basic.
Yeah, basic. Only basic.
So, but he deleted that tweet after the internet, like, mocked him roundly. But then he had a follow-up tweet that
just as
arguably,
bad.
Yeah, he tweeted, and it's again, it says, I have heard time and again that the middle class is getting crumbs, but I'll take it.
Let them eat crumbs.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the crumbs. $1.50 a week. I just want to cover a couple of things from the State of the Union. You guys gave your, I will say, it, what was interesting to me about this speech was that if you took out the specific policy proposals he made, and he actually did make some, you would, it actually sounded, some of it sounded like very soaring rhetoric that you don't expect from Trump about unity, about coming together, about finding common ground. This is language that was actually used. But then if you drill down into, like, the stuff that he wants to happen, then you're like, oh, that's totally racist and that's going to F us up. But the tone was a lot more, it wasn't so, like, you know, I mean, I still remember the American Carnage, you know, the tone of that talk, and it was horrible. So I thought it wasn't a complete disaster. He read from the teleprompter, okay. He didn't make a complete idiot of himself. I don't think there was any ad-libbing. I don't remember if there's any ad-libbing in the speech. But couple of things that he talked a bit about, the hurricanes and, you know, and the different natural disasters, and not at all about climate change itself, but about, you know, the heroes who responded, the first responders. Once again, he talked about the Las Vegas shooting, the shooting of Congressman Steve Scalise, but no mention of gun regulation. He spent a lot of time talking about what he has done for the economy, creating all these new jobs, lowest unemployment, blah, blah, blah. He said that he has his 1 year in office has created $8 trillion of value in the stock market, and spent a long time talking about Democrat tax cuts and reforms. He took a moment to give his shout out to God. He said that's our country is not about government and this and that. It's about faith. It's about God. I thought that was interesting. I mean, it kind of didn't fit, like, where he threw it in, but there it is, as a man of God. Did you guys watch his Supreme Court nominee sitting there watching the speech when he even talked about the new judicial appointments and then said, you know, we got a Supreme Court justice on the bench? The camera panned to Gorsuch, and he was, like, leaning over, I think, and just he said, he was saying something to Sotomayor, and he didn't even smile. He just was like stone-faced the whole time.
Because he knows that his legacy is always going to be tied to Trump. And people who, look, Republicans aren't that stupid, which makes what they're doing that much more insidious right now. The stymieing of the Mueller investigation, enabling and emboldening Trump and administration at every turn, not even having any sort of forceful critical response, except those who are about to leave, like Flake and Corker. And even then, they vote Republican every step of the way, ditto McCain.
There will always be a little imaginary asterisk next to his name. Jay Gorsuch, star, appointed by Trump. The stolen seat belonged to Merrick Garland.
Footnote Garland. Rest in peace. and then Garland giving a middle finger. Look, I thought this State of Union was, it was a beautiful marriage between white nationalism and meets the oligarchy, but done as a romantic reality TV series hosted by Trump. And yes, the bar is so low that he spoke presidentially by actually reading off a teleprompter. But, he did a lot of callbacks, and it was red meat to his base. He brought back Gitmo. Remember Gitmo, guys?
Oh, callback. Yeah.
Guantanamo Bay, and then he made a call to Statue of Liberty, who stands tall and proud, and thankfully he's tall enough so he can't grab her by the you-know-what. Mm-hmm. And that last line, he mostly hit immigrants. And that last line where he all lived mattered, the dreamers,
right,
was so insidious.
That's exactly
opinion.
What he did. He said all Americans are dreamers, or Americans are dreamers too. That is definitely
It's ridiculous. And so even his attempt, Rob, even his attempt to unify through that soaring language, it's Trump. He mm-hmm. can't even sell that. It's like, you just have to sell it. We don't believe you, but at least try to sell it. And it gets undercut by the real vision of this administration, which you've mentioned before. I think the real architects of it are Trump, Kelly, Bannon, and Stephen Miller. It's there.
He set out an actual four-pillar plan for his immigration, I guess, reform or whatever. I think this is his immigration reform plan in a comprehensive way. The four pillars being, he wants to have a path to citizenship for 1.8 million, on the people who were unaccompanied minors when they came here, also known as Dreamers, ending the visa lottery because he's just stupid. Border security, ending catch and release. If people don't know about catch and release, we'll talk about that another time. This is actually a real issue for a number of different reasons. But generally speaking, catch and release happens on the southern border because we are overwhelmed. We are right now detaining, over 40,000 immigrants. Think about that. 40,000 people are in detention centers. And we don't have enough detention centers to hold all the people that ICE wants to hold. So they'll catch people and then they'll put an ankle bracelet around them and then they'll release them because they'll say, okay, now you got to show up for court. That's what catch and release is. And it's an entire industry that deserves some looking at. And then he wants to end chain migration. And he actually, told a blatant lie where he said, it's under the current broken system, a single immigrant can bring in virtually unlimited numbers of distant relatives. And I thought, man, my clients wished. They wish they could.
You had a great tweet. You had a tweet that went viral when someone tried to challenge your use of facts as an immigration attorney.
It was I was live tweeting the State of the Union, and I tweeted that this is a lie. And then I'm sure I was probably arguing with a bot, but there are people saying no, it's not a lie. You can bring in cousins and aunts. And I just retweeted, I'm a fucking immigration lawyer. And for some reason, that must have been the most profound thing I've ever said on Twitter. but it has broken every tweet record I've ever held, and my clout score went up. So yay for the State of the Union.
What's a clout score?
Clout score. Don't even ask. Social media thing. All right. So those are kind of the big things, Gitmo. Yep. Jerusalem's still the capital of Israel. And then he had some, he had a bunch of folks that he had brought as guests, including somebody who is a victim and survivor of the North Korean regime. And I guess that was kind of it. Wasn't as hairy. Nothing really unexpected, I didn't think, other than Melania looking really upset.
I think it was North Korea bad, Iran bad, terrorism bad.
Democrats bad.
Yeah, Democrats bad, regulations bad, mm-hmm. climate change bad, but beautiful, clean coal, is coming back. And people even work in coal, they're like, bro, like coal is not beautiful or clean. no one, even people who make love to coal every night are like, this is not beautiful.
It's not very clean.
But Yeah. So COLA is good. Deregulation is good. Healthcare choice is good because, you know, you get to choose.
He did talk about prescription drugs, and I thought that was actually the one positive thing that I said I can support that. He said he wants to lower prescription drug costs in this country.
Well, he didn't say is how he's going to do it.
Yeah, of course not.
And Bernie Sanders has proposed it. It's like something that that's one of those things. If you're really on board with it, it's a very easy fix. You just need bipartisan support for it. And most Americans would be like, yep, let's take away the monopoly of the pharmaceutical companies and reduce the price of drugs here.
When Trump said that, the camera, panned to Bernie Sanders. I think that was the exact moment. And he just looked like not spaced out, but like, what is happening here? But he was clapping. But it was a really kind of a sad moment.
I'm all for the reduction of prescription drugs.
You're so good at this.
With the one finger. This just gives me an excuse to have fun with these impressions that I can't do in my home.
I know you practice them at home, Ajat. It's okay. You don't have to lie.
I do. I actually do.
All right. So we're going to move on to the next big meat and potatoes story this week. And that was the highly anticipated release of the memo that we have been hearing about for weeks. But I'm going to let Susan lead this discussion. Tell us a little bit about the background, why the hell this goddamn memo matters, and then what it actually was about.
So, yeah, I talk fast, but I swear to God, it's not because of the caffeine. Just how I am. Doesn't mean I don't like caffeine, and Blue Bottle Coffee is some of the best coffee I've found so far.
It's pretty delicious, yep.
And also, it's convenient because it comes right to your door, still fresh.
I'll tell you this, a lot of my friends love Starbucks. I don't like to actually leave my house to get my morning coffee. I just don't want to leave.
Like, can the Starbucks be right there waiting for me? Well, it can with Blue Bottle because they'll ship to your door their delicious roasted coffees and within 48 hours of a delivery. So they're still peak fresh when they get there. And once you've been drinking it, you'll realize that, that your Insta coffee is not going to cut it anymore.
Yeah, I've got friends who are hooked on Blue Bottle coffee. And I mean, I'm talking about like coffee gourmands. They know their coffee. I don't even know my coffees and I love it, but they know their coffees.
So now why is Blue Bottle better? I mean, there's all kinds of coffee, but Blue Bottle is better because, well, for starters, these people, like Rabia said, know their stuff. They know good coffee, so you don't have to. And they search far and wide to secure exclusive relationships with independent growers around the world. So they source only the most delicious coffee and sustainable coffee as well.
So you can feel good about the coffee too. Yeah. It's ethical coffee.
Caffeine and ethics all in one mug. And
it's beautiful.
And they take the freshness just as seriously. That's why you get your coffee within 2 days of ordering it.
Right. They roast it and they send it right to you. It's amazing.
So try some today. Go order some Blue Bottle Coffee at bluebottlecoffee.com/45. And you'll get $10 off your first order. That's bluebottlecoffee.com/45. Oh, Lord. This whole thing is so depressing. The fact that we've wasted this much collective thought and, news time over this, I don't want to call it a nonsense, this nothingness. It's like, ugh. I'm so just over everything, I think.
I'm a little bit disappointed that it wasn't Meteor.
I mean, that's my first reaction. I really thought there'd be, some kind of claim to it that was at least, serious. I knew it'd be bullshit, but I thought they'd have some, more extreme conclusions or something in there to make it more interesting. And it wasn't there at all. It was just boring as hell. But let's go back.
But here's the thing, Susan. I think one of the reasons everybody expected it to be a big deal was because it was getting so much pushback from the Democrats and from the FBI itself. I mean, you had all these, all the people who are opposing the release of the memo were like, this should not be, It shouldn't be produced unless, it shouldn't be produced, period, for national security concerns, but also shouldn't be produced unless there's more information produced that actually, explains the context of shit. But when I saw it, I'm like, you don't need to show me anything else. I totally get what's going on here. I didn't know why there was so much pushback to releasing it.
Because it shouldn't be released at all, especially not for partisan purposes. And that's just a terrible precedent we're starting. And it's not going to end here. It's going to be the first of, apparently, Nunes has already announced, it's going to be five more memos to come. He is now conducting investigations into the FBI, the DOJ, the State Department. I think this is another slow-rolling constitutional crisis, despite the fact the memo itself was boring and stupid, just like Trump's State of the Union speech. But let's back up a bit about what this all is. So everyone's favorite, and not everyone, but definitely the most entertaining Trump person that we've had over this whole friggin' epic series of bad decisions from them is Carter Page. He was originally named by Trump as one of his foreign policy advisors on March 21st, 2016, along with like five others who intriguingly are all apparently subject to the Mueller investigation. I would love to know where that list came from, how I put it together, and why all these randoms got on it, and I suspect we'll know at some point. But one of them's Carter Page, and this one person called him that knew him. He's a gray spot. Like, what do you say about a gray spot? He wasn't terrible. He wasn't great. He was just there in Russia doing, he was working for Merrill Lynch. He did financial stuff. He's a nothing until he became the foreign policy advisor to Donald Trump. He was also the one who made that trip to Moscow in July of 2016, where he gave a couple speeches, you know, did whatever Carter Page does in his spare time.
By hats?
I don't want to know what that
he
is.
He goes hat shopping. We know that.
Yeah. And then shortly after that, the Steele dossier was coming together. Its existence was not made public. Parts of it were shared. Our journals were made aware of it. And there were articles coming out about how during this trip to Moscow, he may have had some extra meetings that weren't disclosed with people, you know, high up in the, you know, Putin's administration. For instance, they said he met with Igor Sechin and with someone from the presidential administration. And as a result, by September, Carter Page had to leave the Trump campaign. And then, of course, we have January 2017, the dossier comes out, all the Carter Page claims are in there. Then we have like a dozen different Carter Page appearances on cable news shows where he confirms his status as king of the crazies. I feel bad saying that because I think he probably does have actual mental illness issues. It's so hard to explain or understand what he's doing, but it does seem like there actually really might be some underlying issues there. Or possibly this is just how he, I don't, who knows? how do you solve a riddle like Carter Page?
Yeah.
You put him in a Coen Brothers movie.
God.
He belongs as exactly, the protagonist in a Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah, will be. One
That's
day.
His role in life.
Give it time.
So in April of 2017, I think that was when the first articles came out suggesting that there was a FISA warrant that had been tamed on him in 2016. Now, that's the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which allows for basically, I mean, it's used to for spying a lot of the time. It can be also used to obtain information later used in criminal proceedings. There's a lot of different parts of the act, but what it does allow is for intelligence collections, not just on foreign powers, but also the agents of foreign powers. And apparently this is what happened with Carter Page. He was deemed to be an agent of the foreign power, Russia, presumably. And on that basis, surveillance was authorized over him.
And can I just add here, for folks who might not know, it's not like, there's not like one agency just says, we're going to get a FISA warrant, you just sign. I mean, there's a process here. It takes multiple layers of, right? Like to get a FISA warrant signed, there's a FISA court. There are like a number of entities are involved in getting an approval on this. So it's not like just one guy sitting in an office saying, you know, who can abuse power basically, you know, potentially by issuing these.
I'm not going to argue the process is perfect and abuses can't happen because that's right. Definitely not the situation here with how it's set up. But there is a very standardized process that does require sign off on the highest levels of agencies involved.
And it gets extended. It's not, you know, permanent. You have to keep proving that there is underlying evidence for this person to be surveilled. Like you have to take evidence back to the judge and present it why they have to extend the investigation. So people think it's like a one off. That's not the case at all, which is, I think, factors in huge in this particular case. As Susan, I didn't mean to take away your thunder, but just want to throw that in for people who don't know.
And also, Carter, so the FISA system, the highest protections are granted under for American citizens who are also found to have probable cause of being a foreign agent. So the most stringent requirements would apply to Carter Page in this case. Now, go ahead from April 17, we learned that. Fast forward through all of Carter Page's many interviews. And then in January, we have Nunes, who was quote-unquote recused from the Russia investigation, resurfacing saying that he has a memo that's going to be groundbreaking that proves, well, the time wasn't clear what, but some kind of, like, devastating blow to the Mueller investigation or to the Obama administration's, like, use of law enforcement. And as days went by, kind of clarified finally that this memo is going to be a summary of what happened with the Carter Page FISA warrant. And then we had, like, I don't even know how long it lasted. We had the period where the House was able to review it and going to vote on it. And then the stupid hashtag release the memo campaign started. And man, the Trump supporters, they were so enthusiastic, but they were so excited. They really thought this was going to be like a big, big deal. Like they had the most amazing plans about how it was going to play out. Like not just like show that like Obama was engaged in like actually wiretapping Trump Tower, but that like Clinton had somehow also like personally been involved in obtaining wiretaps like on the cell phones probably of the Trump campaign.
Can we just also mention that it's not like the president did anything to dissuade that. I mean, when Donald Trump got a hold of this memo, right, and he declassified it.
So the process is this memo, it's not actually, does not contain any primary sources. It's a summary of the actual FISA application and warrant, which is all top secret, can't be released. And Nunes' staff went and looked at these things and wrote a little page, four-page memo on it, three and a smidge pages on it, which could be reviewed by others in the House, but could still not be publicly released. The House then voted along party lines to send it to the White House for review. And if the White House signed off on that, that would authorize the disclosure of what was otherwise top secret information. So they went to the White House and Trump spent a couple days looking at it.
It took him a while to read those 3.5 pages. And this was his reaction after he declassified the memo and sent it back to Congress. He was asked about it at a press conference.
I think it's terrible. You want to know the truth? I think it's a disgrace. What's going on in this country, I think it's a disgrace. The memo was sent to Congress. It was declassified. Congress will do whatever they're going to do. But I think it's a disgrace what's happening in our country. And when you look at that and you see that and so many other things, what's going on, a lot of people should be ashamed of themselves and much worse than that. So I sent it over to Congress. They will do what they're going to do. Whatever they do is fine. It was declassified. And let's see what happens. But a lot of people should be ashamed. Thank you very much.
And then I think later that same day is when the public got a hold of the memo.
I think it was Friday. I mean, it feels like forever again, as always. Okay. This time dilation effect is pretty
severe. They dumped it on a Friday, which for those of you who are listening and don't know, that's traditionally the time to dump news that no one either...
Not anymore.
Cares about? Oh, yeah, well, with Trump.
But I feel like in the Trump era, all the big scoops are on Fridays now.
Interesting. So just to keep the weekend occupied.
Yeah. Like, Friday night news dumps are, like, a big thing now. It's not like a barrier. It's like, here's your weekend entertainment.
Yeah, to increase the ratings, because also the media, like, you know, people usually go out and, like, no, you have to watch CNN and Fox and MSNBC.
But you're right. Traditionally, Friday stories were the ones you wanted to bury, and you just didn't want to cause too much of a... But it's hard with this one. So the memo comes out, and we all frantically read it. And I really expected something really lengthy and detailed, and I thought I need to take out, like, an hour of my day to, like, read the memo. And then I read it on my phone, like, in 5 minutes. And tell us about the memo.
So it's concluded... Like, what the memo itself claims it's showing... is to, one, raise concerns with the legitimacy and legality of certain DOJ and FBI interactions with the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. And then also, the memo, it claims that the findings it summarizes, quote, represent a troubling breakdown of legal processes established to protect the American people from abuses related to the FISA process. Now, it's important to distinguish, like, what the memo actually is about and how it's being used by various political forces. So even though the talking point among the most hardcore Trump supporters, this shows Obama was spying on Trump. The memo itself does not make that claim. That's not part of its actual text, although it's definitely how it's being used by Trump and others. But just in terms of what the memo claims it does, it doesn't do that at all. And it's hard even to figure out what the argument of the memo really is, because it's not even obvious, like, what parts of it they're claiming are, like, bad acts or wrongdoing by the Obama administration. But here's a summary of what we know. So, on October 21st, 2016, a FISA warrant was obtained on Carter Page. We don't know what kind of surveillance it authorized, but in his various interviews, Carter Page has mentioned both, like, phone intercepts and emails being intercepted. But who knows? Like, yeah. That seems likely. I mean, most probably did have all that stuff involved, but who knows? And according to the Nunes memo, we know that, so here's the big thing, we know that it was authorized to normal procedures. This was not a case of, like, something being forced through or, like, underhanded work by, like, one or two people in the DOJ or FBI. This was a regular process that they followed. And in fact, they had several very high-ranking officials sign off. In all, we know that it was signed off on by, various iterations of it were signed off on by James Comey, Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, at the time, the Deputy Attorney General, Sally Yates, followed by then acting Deputy Attorney General Dana Boyente, and also Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. So we have this FISA warrant of unknown exactly contents or like unknown targets, but I'm sure eventually we'll find all that out. And it was issued again October 21st, 2016. Now, for American citizens that are targeted by the FISA warrants, every 90 days it has to be renewed. You can't just get an open-ended limit. For like for a foreign state, for instance, you could go much longer without getting renewed. So 90 days in, and that would be what, January 18th to 19th-ish, somewhere around there, they authorize it again. So another 90 days goes past where they can conduct surveillance on Carter Page. Then on, what, April, late April, once again, it's up for renewal. They renew it again. 90 days pass. Then we have sometime in approximately July, they renew it again. We know, or we think we know, that was the last time it was renewed. So sometime around October 2017, the FISA warrant expired. We don't know why. We don't know whose call that was. We just don't know. But that's what we do know about the actual warrant itself. Now, the complaints from from Nunes and from some of the GOP. Well, actually, first, what did you guys think about like their complaints? What did you see their argument being about why it's bad or wrong?
The problem with the Nunes memo, first and foremost, I think I just want to lay out, is the only intent here is to muddy the waters for Trump's base, to taint as much as possible the intent of the FBI, the DOJ, and any critic of Trump. So when this information comes out, which they know they will, it's to cause enough confusion for people to say, eh, it's a toss-up. Or they were hoping for this to be the smoking gun that would give them Trump ammunition to fire the Assistant Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, who has actually control over the Mueller investigation because Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, has recused himself, people forget that, because of making false statements when it comes to, wait for it, Russia conversations.
Well, that's not technically why he recused. The party line is that it is considered inappropriate for someone who was involved in a campaign to be in charge of investigations of that campaign. And he was involved with the Trump campaign. But everyone knows that's really because he got caught about the Russia stuff.
Okay, totally fair. No, it's good to be accurate about this. And so with the memo itself, if this was the smoking gun that we're all waiting for, right? Because the way they promoted it was, this is it. This is going to sink it. Donald Trump tweeted it. I'm exonerated. I'm vindicated. All this stuff is nonsense. If anything, it actually affirms the Russian investigation, because buried in the bottom of the memo itself, written by Kash Patel, Nunes' right-hand man and a South Asian that we release to the free market on behalf of all
South Asians. We are so ashamed of you, Kash. We are so ashamed of you.
And Ajit Pai and Nikki Haley, you are released.
Yes.
It says the following, that the Russian investigation was started by information that came from George Papadopoulos, the foreign policy advisor. So it wasn't even initiated by the Steele dossier or this investigation into Carter Page. It debunks its own logic. But
that's the beauty of it. You know,
that's the beauty of it, right? Because it admits, oh, yeah, the FBI started its investigation before Trump was elected because of George Papadopoulos, who's a foreign policy advisor to Trump, who, by the way, if you guys aren't paying attention, has pled guilty. And we believe
it's cooperating.
Is working with
the yeah. Government. I mean, so my response to your question, Susan, is this. What I think they were trying to say, what I think the allegation they're trying to root in this memo is that this entire investigation was brought on by the Steele dossier, which was paid for by Hillary and the DNC. It was opposition research. And so the entire thing is tainted and biased, right? If the root of this, the poisonous
but
fruit,
what,
whatever it
what
is.
What is tainted by it?
That the entire investigation is, that if the Russian investigation, like the basis of it was the Steele dossier, like I feel like that's what they were trying, but like you said, which I had, they like debunked the whole thing by mentioning Papadopoulos, but I feel
see,
like that's what
the
they were trying
that's
to
not
say.
Barking in this whole memo.
What's
they're
that?
Trying to make that connection between fruit of the poisonous tree.
Right.
But the memo never says what the fruit is.
But you're using logic, Susan. It's not about logic.
Yeah, but that's the, like I like if you try and like break down the memo to like see what the claims that are actually being made are, you can't get anywhere because it's all it doesn't go. Most importantly, like okay, if you're saying that this shows that there was bad intel obtained wrongfully that's used against Trump, what was it? The memo itself doesn't say anything was used against Trump, or that it was used in any way, or that anything was found.
And that's what scares them. But that's what scares them, because if you release the underlying intel, I think it will be far more damaging to Page, Nunes, and Trump.
Well, Nunes, who said he wrote the, who apparently wrote the memo, said he never read the underlying intel that got them the FISA warrants. But the second thing is that what I found even weirder about the entire memo was not even so much that I felt like this is stuff they've been saying publicly anyways. I didn't think there was anything here that I haven't heard, like GOP talking heads and Trumpsters and, like, you know, all his apologists. They've been saying the same crap the whole time. Like, what in here was new that we have not heard from them before?
Let's break it down for a bit. Let's start with, like, why is the conduct legend here wrong? Why is, like, whatever this memo says, why does it show that there were bad things happening? And its basic claims are that, let's see, first of all, that the dossier was paid for by the DNC and Hillary Clinton, and that Steele got money to make this together, and that this was not disclosed appropriately in the FISA warrant. What we know now from, like, other leaks since then is that actually the original application did state that this was politically sourced information. It came from an oppo campaign. It did not use the words DNC or Hillary Clinton, but, like, okay, that judge is going to read this and says, okay, Steele dossier came from Steele, who was paid for by a political campaign to collect upper research. Are they going to think the Green campaign did, the Green Party did this? Like, is this Jill Stein's work? Come on, no. This is obviously comes from either Clinton or the DNC.
But here's the thing, though. Steele's research into this, like, this dossier did not begin with, like, the Hillary campaign and DNC. It was actually research that the opposition research began in the primaries with Republicans.
Well, Steele didn't. Steele was later on. He didn't come on until after, actually, Fusion's work was picked up by the Democrats.
So the basis of the information was Fusion, right? Like, Fusion had begun the research for Republicans.
Fusion began it, but the Steele stuff didn't start. Fusion didn't hire Steele until after Clinton was the one paying for it.
Washington Free Beacon, which is a conservative outlet funded by a Republican, was the first one to retain Fusion GPS and paid Fusion GPS, and then Fusion GPS then hired Steele. But even then, I agree with Susan, but it wasn't the sole piece of information that the judge relied upon.
Well, it doesn't matter, though. That's the point, though, because, like...
Exactly.
So they're trying to make this... So the argument being sort of stated by the GOP is that somehow it was wrong to use it information at all because it came from, you know, oppo research. Now, that's a bullshit claim. So they don't do that in the memo. They try and play it off as saying, oh, they didn't say it was that the Democrats were funding it, and that's the harm. But they did say a political campaign paid for it, which obviates whatever harm they're trying to suggest. And also, let's back up for a moment. The idea, like, having, like, warrants and having probable cause found on bullshit reasons for extremely biased and wrong reasons, like, targeting people for whatever reason happens at all levels of investigation, all levels of law enforcement, and it is a problem. It's not just the FISA court. Well, the FISA court's secret, so possibly more of an issue there, theoretically. It's widespread, and most of the time, courts don't care, because probable cause is relatively low threshold, and as long as you show facts that get there, and you don't hold out facts that, like, negate whatever you just said, the judge is going to find probable cause. There's nothing unusual here. Nothing about this is remotely different from how this operates in all probable cause situations, really. But again, the fact that the dossier was paid for by the Democrats doesn't have any effect on its validity in being used. And moreover, it's not being used against someone it was targeting, because this was a warrant on Carter Page. Not Trump, not the Trump campaign. It was on Carter Page, who left the Trump campaign a month before. And the Trump campaign had sworn up and down, had no connection whatsoever to Trump. In September and August, we have probably a dozen statements from various high-level Trump campaign staffers who said either, well, so half of them, like, deny that he was ever in the campaign. As Stephen Miller put it when he was asked about Carter Page, who? We also have Hope Hicks saying that he has only an informal role. And we have Jason Miller, who's saying that he has no role whatsoever, never did, never has. And we have no idea what he's ever done ever. So this was not targeting the Trump campaign, which means why would any bias behind the Steele dossier apply to this rando Carter Page?
And also this counterintelligence into potential Russia and Trump administration collusion started before Trump was elected. And the FBI knew about it, and 11 days before the election, they decided to reopen the Clinton email investigation, which some say had enough of an impact to tilt some voters, and also Donald Trump praised James Comey, a Republican, and kept him on as the FBI director. And then Christopher Wray, who is the new FBI director, was handpicked by Donald Trump, another Republican, who took a hugely bold move and made a statement through the FBI saying they have, quote, grave concerns about this memo because it has so many omissions, which basically make it unreliable. Translation, it's nonsense. It's a nothing burger. And all these, McCabe is a Republican. And, you know, the thing is, all of this is you're using logic to dissect this. And I'm glad you are. So people who are listening understand how the process actually works. But again, I think Republicans don't care, and neither does Sean Hannity. Any sort of tangential connection that taints it, and all you need to do is throw in the word Clinton, is enough for the base to say, aha, not only is the FISA court motivated by an improper motive, but I think what's worse, Rabia, is now they're saying is there's a deep state collusion with the Clinton campaign. So that means DOJ, FBI, you know.
Oh,
people,
yeah. I mean, you have surrogates calling for a cleansing. They were literally calling for a cleansing. And then when you're talking about Nunes with the phase two memos coming out, I don't, you know, we'll get into that for in a bit.
Yeah. Paul Ryan said we need a purge of the FBI. Yeah. That's really troubling.
So, you know, Susan, I have decided this year, and I think I mentioned to you, that I am probably going back into legal practice. And doing so, first of all, what I need is a space to meet clients. And that's been a little bit complicated.
What, your podcast studio isn't going to
work? My podcast studio is not going to work anymore. No more basement for my clients. But I have a great fix, and that is DaVinci. We've talked about DaVinci before, but I'm seriously considering this for my office needs, because DaVinci makes it incredibly easy to select the perfect business address. They have thousands of high-profile business addresses and offices in upper-scale office locations in every state in the entire country.
Yeah, working from home is great, but the downside is when you have to actually be professional, you're kind of at a loss.
Sometimes you got to put on some pants and a blazer and actually meet some people.
Unfortunately, we still live in a world where pants are necessary.
Yeah, but you know what? It's expensive. It is. I've been looking. Look, I live in the D.C. area. It is not cheap to get an office space, but DaVinci is affordable. And an address from them also helps you boost your company's image, you know, because it makes a difference. You know, your image makes a difference. If a client comes and you're in a broke down space, it might not bode well for future work, but with DaVinci, great addresses start at only $50 a month.
I mean, so you can have two choices. If you like are us, a podcast, we operate out of our homes, you can give your home address and then have people like stalk you online and see where you're living and judge you. Or you can give them an actual business address and you'd look real professional.
Right. And if you choose DaVinci, look, again, in every state in the entire country, they've got locations, thousands of addresses. DaVinci is fast, it's affordable, it's easy, and you can start using your DaVinci business address for just $50 a month. And you know, they have lots of plans. So, you know, you can like, if you need more than just an address, like, you know, where you have correspondence and things go, you put it on your business card. If you need a space to actually meet, then they have, you know, the plans vary. But all you got to do is go to DaVinciWork.com/45. And for a limited time, you're going to get 50% off your first purchase. And my early clients, when I reopen my practice, might be meeting me in a DaVinci space. So I'm excited about that. And I'm using this promo code. Once again, that's DaVinciWork.com/45. Terms and conditions do apply, but don't miss this great offer. 50% off. See DaVinciWork.com/45 for details.
Yeah. And so, I mean, just on the first level of what the memo's trying to do, it fails. Like, question one, how is what they did wrong? It's alleges insufficient information in the application, which seems like bunk because they gave apparently quite a lot of facts and did not withhold that it was politically motivated research in the Steele dossier. The second possible area of wrongness is that it was used to target the Trump campaign as some kind of like political espionage. That's bunk because Carter Page was clearly not part of the campaign, not part of the Trump, you know, efforts at that time. And in fact, any implication that this was motivated to harm Trump is defeated by the fact that they waited to obtain this surveillance order. So Carter Page was on their radar for a long time, probably since like late July, they were looking at this guy. But they waited until 3 months later, after he'd been gone from the campaign period of time, to make their move. That shows that they delayed while there was a risk of conducting espionage or anything about the Trump campaign. And second of all, if Trump was innocent, he would have wanted them to do this because Carter Page's activities suggested he was a foreign agent in Russia, that he was claiming to act on Trump campaign's behalf for various activities. And Carter Page, by the way, is also a known Russian agent or wannabe Russian agent because the Russians tried to recruit him in 2013. Oh, and also in 2013, he claimed to be an informal advisor to the Kremlin. So what it looked like from the outside is that Russia was using Carter Page to infiltrate the Trump campaign. Trump campaign was the victim here. They were being targeted by an outside source with bad intentions, and what the FBI was doing would be an effort to counteract that harm. Of course, Trump is not innocent, so his reaction is as a co-conspirator, not as a victim of the crime.
But here's my worry. My worry about this is, you know, there have been hundreds of hours now about everybody discussing this for the last few days, is, you know, when Trump surrogates are doing this kind of stuff, I wonder to what extent it's calculated to do only two things. I can't imagine that, like, even Nunes could look at this, first of all, it's a shitty, very terribly written memo, and think this actually means anything on any level. But what it does do is, what I had said, is muddy the waters for the base. A lot of them are really not going to be able to follow along what's really going on here. It just sounds like a bunch of crap thrown together that implicates all the agencies. There's a deep state, you know, conspiracy against Trump, and it's telling his base to look out for it. Now, like you said, today he called Democrats treasonous. I mean, this is... that plus keeping us busy, right? Keeping everybody else like just occupied.
It does do that.
Yeah, it occupied. It's like we're just like throwing punches at smoke, you know, that just doesn't even matter in a way. We're talking about it.
But because you know what? I think we still live in a world where facts and truth and logical arguments matter. Not to everyone all the time, but on balance, I firmly believe that they do matter and must be used. So I guess for me, the final question about the Steele dossier and the claims that they're trying to make with it is, what harm to Trump did this cause? Like, there's so many gaps in their arguments here. The first being why it's wrong, but
they haven't articulated it.
Well, yeah.
Right?
So is it harmful to Trump because it was used to hurt his chances in the election? No, because it was not announced during the election. They didn't use any information obtained on the surveillance during the election. In fact, on the 31st of October, the FBI had leaked that story to the New York Times, where they denied any connection. So on the one hand, 10 days earlier, they had gotten a FISA warrant saying, like, we have, like, troubling connections here between Trump campaign staffers and Russia. And then 10 days later, they're saying, oh, no, don't worry about that. Nothing's going on with Trump. So they buried the story. And, you know, arguably that was the right decision, the right call, if they'd applied it consistently across the board to all the candidates. So, again, maybe it wasn't to harm the Trump campaign. Maybe it was, like, the insurance policy they keep talking about. And they do actually, in the memo, I was wondering for a while why they had the very last section on the fourth page where it goes on about the Lisa Page and Pete Strzok, the FBI lawyer and agent who were involved in the investigation. And I think it's because it says the very last line is, the Strzok-Lisa Page texts also reflect extensive discussions about the investigation, orchestrating leads to the media, and including a meeting with Deputy Director Andrew Cage to discuss an insurance policy against President Trump's election. I think what they're trying to suggest is that this FISA warrant on Carter Page was the insurance policy, which is the stupidest insurance policy in the history of the world, because if you wanted to target Trump using the Steele dossier, you go to his goddamn personal attorney, Michael Cohen, who was named in there as doing worse conduct than Carter Page engaged in. And you know what? You go get a FISA warrant on Michael Cohen, you know what you don't get back? You get back proof that he was paying off a porn actress so she'd be quiet about the affair he had with her. So, yeah.
For an LLC in which he puts his own name on it. That was awesome.
If you wanted to destroy the Trump campaign using the Steele dossier, that's how you do it. It would have been so easy. But they weren't trying to do that.
Follow the money. Just follow the money. Yeah. That's what's going to bring it back.
Although, honestly, come on. I think about what this guy did during the campaign. He had been exposed in so many ways. I feel like even that kind of revelation couldn't have brought him down. I don't know anymore.
But they weren't doing surveillance on Trump. They were trying
to
avoid it.
They were not. Yeah, they were not. Well, can we talk briefly before we wrap this up about phase two of Nunes' investigation?
Yeah, phases, whatever, like 2, 3, 4, 5. Editions. It's like it's gonna be the new like comic book series, Nunes' Memos.
It's the new Fast and Furious. It's just gonna keep going until
forever.
Vin Diesel dies.
Well, Washington Post reported that Nunes said, we are in the middle of what I call phase two of our investigation, which involves other departments, specifically the State Department and some of the involvement they had in this. Huh. And so Republicans close to Nunes are saying there could be as many as 5 additional memos. That is a lot of our goddamn time.
And you know, all it does, again, is it fuels the base. But what it does, though, and I think this is a positive, is if you look at U.S. history, Usually people who take on the entire law enforcement apparatus, especially the FBI, especially presidents, they end up losing.
As a defense attorney, I can confirm this.
Yeah, and I said something a year ago to someone. They were talking about, oh, what's going to happen with Trump? I'm like, look, he's gone after the press and he's gone after the FBI and CIA. A marriage between the press and the FBI is not good if you're opposing both.
It's called deep throat.
Yeah, there'll be more leaks. And what they're going to do with Trump, and this is just, what do I know? I was just predicting, right? I think they're going to cripple and contain Trump. Piece by piece, I said, notice whenever there's going to be good news, a little bit of bad news is going to come out to neutralize him. Cripple, 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 cripple. They're going to wait and see until his popularity caters. More and more Republicans are going to lose. They're going to, it's just like, you know, death by a thousand cuts. And he has inflicted self-inflicted wounds bigger and worse than anyone else has done against him, right? Like obstruction of justice. Nobody was talking about that until Trump fired Comey and then gave the justification for it, going against his own White House comm department. So I think, yes, Nunes and the Republicans, unfortunately, are all in. They're going to ride Trump to the bitter end. And Carter Page and Nunes are the hills upon which the Republicans are going to die on.
Y'all, new update. New update. Uh-oh. Carter Page is going to be on the Ingram angle tonight.
Oh, God.
This and he'll poor say guy. Something stupid.
He will. He'll and, you know, honestly, as an attorney, every time I see this, there's a part of me that's like, yeah, keep talking. But I'm like, don't do that. What is wrong with you? How do you not have the sense?
I think you and me, Rabia, like tweeted, get an attorney, Carter Page. Get Please. An attorney.
Yeah. Well, we've got so three
that's
lawyers
why,
on this.
That's the one good. That's the one good.
Well, we will all be, I'll be watching at least because that'll be tweet worthy. But there's also, I think today there was going to be in the House intel, they're going to decide whether or not to release the Democrats' memo. It's just going to be a war of memos going forward, I suppose. But
God, who knew that this is the most boring, like, deep state coup civil war ever fought with memos?
My fear is that they are really trying to stoke a real life, like, civil unrest in this country with this kind of stuff. And I think, you know, Trump and Bannon, that was Bannon's philosophy, burn it all down, right? Like, destroy the economy, destroy the government, just burn it all down, and then it's going to cause a kind of conflict that will make us great again.
I think Bannon was hoping he wouldn't get burned down with it, but he'll at least get the first part of his wish the way things are going.
I guess, or maybe, I don't know, I feel like he's another cockroach that's going to remain standing at the end of it. Okay, I'm going to wrap up just by asking y'all, did your team win in the Super Bowl?
I was rooting for Philadelphia.
All right.
Nick Foles. Who would have thought that Nick Foles would emerge from the dead and be the spark that would light the fire that would burn the First Order down? So give it up to the Eagles and Nick Foles. And I'm
Susan,
so
what
happy
about you? Did you have a good Super Bowl? Was it happy for you?
I was playing board games and I lost, so I guess my team didn't win.
What did you say?
Oh, you're a Pats fan? What?
No, I was playing board games and I lost. So oh. my team went down.
Your team went down. It's okay. Your team won a lot. You know, it's time for the Eagles to have their day in the sun. So I'm pretty happy for Philly. And, you know, on Undisclosed, we're doing a whole series of
Philadelphia
convictions.
That's true.
If I was going to
seem cheerful, it'd be Philly because of our cases. Yeah.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of Philly. So, you know, a lot of love for
and
the
and the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court. It was a big day for Pennsylvania and Philadelphia.
It's been a good couple of days. All right, guys. Thank you so much for this awesome discussion. Thank you so much. Can you tell our listeners how they can find you online?
At Wajahat Ali. And I'll be tweeting some nonsense, I'm sure, later today.
Yep, and we will tweet out links to Wajahat's Twitter profile. And also, you can probably find him on Facebook. And if you just Google him, you know, all you got to do is Google the man. He's all over the place. All right, thank you guys so much. And you have a good week. We'll be back in 7 days.
Honestly, it was bad energy. No, it was bad energy. You're up there. You've got half the room going totally crazy, wild. They loved everything. They want to do something great for our country. And you have the other side, even on positive news, really positive news like that, they were like death and un-American. Un-American. Somebody said treasonous. I mean, yeah, I guess why not? Can we call that treason? Why not?
A Big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Mithil Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. And guess what? You can even leave us a voice message. Call us at 202-670-8345, and you never know, we might just play your message on the air. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.